This workshop is called In the Spotlight, Living in the Sunlight of the Spirit. Focus on the spiritual awakening and how we maintain our spiritual fitness on a daily basis. My name's Karen, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. And I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then Debbie, who is my buddy and colleague all week, is going to be sharing her story as well. So I'm going to begin by just sharing with you a little bit about my story. I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I came to Overeaters Anonymous in 1974. And I've been able to keep coming back ever since. And I wish I could tell you that I had 35 years of back-to-back perfect abstinence, but that hasn't happened for me. But I have followed a journey that's brought me so much growth and so much development and so much joy. My last abstinence started on September 1st, 1999, and I'm now currently maintaining 75-pound weight loss. And so I want you to know that for me, my program is basically, I work all of the steps, but it's basically a spiritual program. And it's hard for me to ferret out what is spiritual and what is the spiritual part and what isn't the spiritual part, because I think all of the program, all of the steps are spiritual. But I want to share just some things that help me to keep myself going. And I want to read, I love the big book, and I've read a lot of it. When I started a long time ago, we didn't have books that were any OA books. And so we used the big book of AA and the 12x12 of AA as we studied. And so I fell in love with them a long time ago. And I kept thinking, where is it that it says the sunlight of the spirit? And I couldn't remember where it was. And so I looked at several places I thought it would be. And finally, I found it. And it's in the section on the fourth step. In the big book, and it says, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and happiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But the compulsive overeater whose hope is in the maintenance of and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of compulsive eating returns, and we overeat, undereat, or whatever our behavior is, and with us to do so is to die. If we are to live, we have to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be dubious luxury of normal men, but for the compulsive overeater, these things are poison. So I think it was interesting that it's in that fourth step. I was thinking of step three, step 11, the thing in the back that says the spiritual experience, but it's in the fourth step that it talks about this. And I really do believe that it is all of the spirit, all of the steps that provide for me, as in step 12, that spiritual experience as a result of working the steps. So I want to talk to you a little bit about how I can maintain my spiritual. I think that's what they were asking me to do. How do I keep, there's another part in the 10th step, right after the 10th step in the big book, it says, I call it the 10th step promises, where it says that we will recoil from our addiction as from a hot flame. I love that. When I was first in OA, I thought, if I can ever feel like I recoil from compulsive eating, I thought that was so great. And remember, it says that we are able to do that, and we're not afraid, nor are we cocky, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So how do we keep in fit spiritual condition? And that's, I just want to share a little bit about some of the things that help me. First of all, I think, of course, we talked about the steps, but a number of years ago, I heard somebody speaking with a lot of experience at a marathon, and she said that for newcomers, she always encourages them to start with the tools because she believed that the tools lead you into being able to do the steps. And I think that that's true for me, that as I work the tools, then I get involved in the steps and the steps do the healing for me. I heard somebody say just the other day at a meeting, just this week, they said, I may be powerless over food, but I'm not powerless over the footwork. And I think that the tools and the steps are my footwork. And then, you know, every other plan of eating that our program of dieting that I experienced in the past, I had to focus on what I did around food. That's what I had to focus on. And in OA, what I learned is I focus on doing the footwork, and my higher power gives me the ability to abstain from compulsive overeating. That's why I came here. I came here because I was so down that I didn't know what else I could do. And OA felt like the last place on the block. And if this didn't work, I didn't know what I'd do because I was so desperate. And I heard them in these meetings say, and in the literature, that the obsession could be lifted. Now, other people say you can maintain your weight, you can do all these things. Once you lose your weight, you'll never, you know, all that. But they said the obsession could be lifted. And boy, if there was anything I wanted was to have that obsession lifted. I was so tired of fighting it, so exhausted from fighting it. So when I heard that that could happen, it's been a process of having that happen. And sometimes I still have days when, you know, food calls me, but hardly ever. I loved what Laurie talked about last night. The miracle for him is that ice cream can be in the freezer and he doesn't care. You know, and truly that's true for me. And sugar was my main line. And I can have it in my house. I can have it around. I can see other people eat it. I can even serve it. And it doesn't feel repulsive to me. It just feels like I wouldn't give away what I have for that. You know, it looks good. I had a friend who used to say it's kind of like chocolate cake. I mean, it's kind of, a chocolate cake was kind of like an old boyfriend. It's like it still looks good, but the thrill is gone. And I think that that's what a joy. What a miracle. And sometimes I get discouraged with myself, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. I should be further along. I've been here 35 years. How come I'm not further? And then I go back and I look how far I've come and I realize, what a miracle. A miracle that I'm standing here. A miracle that you're all sitting here. What a miraculous program this is. And I know that the one thing I've done better than anything else in this program is keep coming back. I just refuse to let go away and stay away because I didn't know any place else to go. So when I'm working my program on a day-to-day basis, there are certain things that I know I need to do to connect to that spiritual power that allows me to have this obsession lifted. Not just the obsession with food, but my crazy thinking that leads me eventually, if I don't deal with it, to overeat. And so one of the things, I talked about the tools, and one of the tools wasn't a tool when I started, but it is now, and that is writing. When we started, we didn't have that as a tool. But that was a tool I really didn't want to do. You know, I didn't want to have a sponsor. I didn't really want a food plan. There were a lot of things I didn't want, but I really did not want to write. What good is writing going to do? What will I do? How will I say it? You know, and I had this one sponsor, and actually she was younger, way younger than me. And I have to say, I've been around so long that OA was just less than a year old in Tacoma when I first came. So we were kind of, I call them my sandbox buddies from those old days. We were all just sick of as hoodles, and but we were hanging out together, and and so we were. And anyway, this young lady had more time than me, and she came up from California, where you know OA was strong already, and so she, I didn't like her at first because I thought she was a brat and she swore, and that hurt my spiritual ears. So, and you know what? She eventually became my sponsor. Those are the miracles that happen. Anyway, I was complaining and I was struggling with my abstinence. And so she said, we're going to start writing. I don't know, wine. And she said, just get the paper and the pen and start writing. You know, and she wasn't real gentle about it either. And so I did. And she wanted me to write just how I felt. She said, we're not writing an essay. You don't even have to show it to me. You're not getting graded on this. Just write. And so I did. And eventually I realized that there were feelings underneath there. And she said, we found out that when I was eating, it was because I was home. And she's, other times I was okay. And she said, is there a problem in your marriage? And I said, I fired her. Because I was very spiritual, and I was very active in my church, and I was a spiritual giant, right? And they don't get divorces, so it can't be right. But anyway, that's how I started. And I have found ways to get in touch with my feelings, to get in touch with my defects of character that really, really are healing for me. And writing is one of the most precious things. So writing is one of the things that I do on a regular basis. I had to learn how to meditate. I didn't know how to meditate. You know, at the beginning of meetings when they say a moment of silence to reflect on why we're here, and then we'll close with we used to close with the Lord's Prayer back then. And I remember thinking, I don't even think we wait a minute, but it seemed forever to me. And my brain was saying, I wonder what I should be thinking. I wonder what I should be thinking, you know. Couldn't be still, and it took me a long time to learn how to be still, and be able to listen to my higher power, to just be quiet. And that's been a process for me, just like writing has been a process for me. My learning to meditate has been a process for me. And I know that when I'm doing it on a regular basis, it's easier to let go and do it. But when I, it's just like exercise, when I leave it for a while, it's harder to do. I think my meetings are so important to me as well, and having a sponsor. And I want to say that the third step prayer is one of the most, has been a real helpful for me. I argued with the program a lot in the beginning, and one of the things when I first heard the third step prayer, I thought, I don't think I even believe that. And I don't agree with that. God's not going to take all my difficulties away. That's not going to happen. And, you know, I argued about things. And finally, I thought, well, you know what? The message came, well, maybe, you know, lots of people that have followed this path, the book that the big book talks about, maybe there's something there. And eventually it became very important to me. And I like to do walking as my exercise, and it's also a spiritual part for me. And I use the third step prayer as kind of the backbone. I like to go through it, and in the beginning says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as you see fit. Anyway, I go over all my physical, my emotional, my spiritual, all those, and kind of turn it over. And then it says, help me. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them. And that was the part. God's not going to do that. And then I realized, okay, Karen, what are your difficulties? Well, my difficulties really are my defects of character. Why am I miserable? Because some defective character is going on. So then I can kind of review those in that part for me. This is just for me. And as I review those, I'm thinking, oh, God, remove this from me, remove this from me. And then so each part of that prayer, I can go over it and sort of meditate it while I'm walking. You know, For a while I was walking I couldn't be outside. It was too nasty, so I had a treadmill. Don't close your eyes and meditate. and let go of the handles, because one morning I was doing this, my husband was in the other part of the house, and I crashed. I mean, we just went right off the end, and scared him to death. So I had to learn that you, when you're meditating, you do have to kind of pay attention. But those are the things that have really helped me to stay connected to those tools, and those tools especially are really special to me. And as I do my writing, I'm becoming more aware of then what I can do to turn over to my higher power. And those are the tools that are, and you know what I want to say, it's almost time for me to quit, right? I want to just say that sometimes one tool is one that I need to work more, I seem to have to work on one more than the others, and then later on it might be something different. I might do a lot of writing, not do as much reading for a while, and then I may switch. So there's different things. The other thing is, I thought I had to be able to do all these tools every day. Well, you can't do all of these things absolutely every day. I couldn't. It would take me 3 hours, and I had a full-time job and kids, and you know, so it might take 6 hours to do all this stuff. But I know that I don't have to do it perfectly, that I can do each day what seems best for me. And when I do that, the miracle is that life just keeps getting better and better. So glad to see all of you today. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Debbie.
I have notes, which I will probably not even use. Okay. So, spiritual awakening and how I maintained my spiritual fitness through program. That's what I'm going to speak about. I'm one of these people who've had the burning bush experiences. You know, I've had the aha moments that everyone wants. And they always say, well, how did you do it? And I say, I have no idea. But I'm going to talk about where I came from a little bit. That'll get me centered here. Come down a bit. When I was 15, I was a alcoholic. And I was given a month to live. I was also a bulimic. And I was taking about 30 Tylenol a day. And I had this little system, when they would take my blood, I would stop doing what I was doing so the blood would appear normal. But I was really sick, if you can imagine. I had ulcers up my esophagus and everything else. And the first miracle in my life happened when the blood spilt on the bus that was going from the small town I lived in to a big city. And so they had to call me out of school for another quick draw so they can get it on the next bus. And it just happens my dad was the vice principal. So there we go, quick ride, down we go, and they found this. And I've always believed that that was God's first intervention in my life. And so that's where I began. And at 16, I had a girlfriend that committed suicide. We had tea in the morning, and she killed herself in the afternoon. And I went to her funeral, and she was really, really deep into the church. And at that point in time, I kind of was too. I had that sort of way of being. Anyhow, and I didn't understand that. And a piece of me shut down back then spiritually. And then at 17, I got pregnant and married and moved away from home, graduated from high school. It's a busy year. And through that process, I somehow believed that I was being punished in life, and that if there was a God, God was dealing me the dish, and I just had to learn to deal with it on my own. But I didn't need God. And so that's where I was when I'd had a few off-the-wall experiences before I came into program. And due to those experiences, I came to a belief that, A, there was a God. What it was and what it existed, I didn't know. But I knew there was something out there. I had had the experiences to prove this to myself. And that whatever I asked for, I got. That was it. Then I had moved from Calgary to Edmonton, which is about 3 hours away, so I did a move. And I had asked for that. I'd prayed for that and got it. And anyhow, but I didn't in my heart believe that God loved me. And so I came into program what I call with a dead spirit. And I believe spirit is the part of us that is the happy, joyous, and free. In the promises, it says we'll be happy, joyous, and free. I think that's the awakening of the spirit. That's the awakening of our hearts, and that's the awakening of who we really are. And I do believe we're physical matter, and we have a brain, so that's our little emotional centers. And so that's the emotional, spiritual, and physical part of us. But when I came into to program, I was so heavy into the food and to thinking about food and eating food that I think I was like a walking dead person. You know, I didn't really feel anything. I definitely didn't know what love felt like. I didn't really laugh. I was very miserable. In fact, I came to program to get happy because some speaker told me years ago in college she found happiness in a way. I didn't correlate the food part of it. I thought, oh, she got happy. I'm going to go try that place. And, you know, physically, I was 280 pounds. You know, I was miserable. I couldn't barely walk. And so that's where I came in at. And I thought, okay, I wanted to be happy, and I wanted to know who I really was. That's really what I wanted. And so I came into program, and I started working the steps. And I got to step 3, and it was you have to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. You had to make a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. Well, I found that a really hard decision to make, not because I didn't believe in God, but because why would I turn my life over to something or some being that I figured did not like me or even love me? And I figured I was pond scum in the eyes of all spiritual realms. So I just decided that I just couldn't do that. Step 3. I'd said it, and I acted as if, and I pretended, but it just didn't happen. And then my sponsor thought I had done step 3, so she suggested we do step 4. And I said, I have no memories of my childhood, which I didn't. And she says, well, we need to fix that. And I said, okay, what are we doing? And she says, I'm going to take you to some woman somewhere that did this hand healing thing. And I said, sure, let's go. You know, I'm willing to try anything. I'm pretty open for experiences. And before I left my house, I decided to pray. And no, believe me, this is my theory, that anything I asked for, I would get. So, but I didn't always, I was starting not to believe that in a way. I don't know why, but it was kind of rocking that belief a bit. So I said to God, God, if you want me to do this step 3, you're going to have to let me know that you love me. Because unless I know you love me, I just can't do that step 3. And I'm a tactical type. I need some evidence. I'm not good with just being told this stuff. And so I go to do this little hand deal, and the woman immediately tells me, don't expect much. You know, I wasn't living the honorable life in that realm of whatever she was into. And I said, I'm fine with that. You know, I don't expect much, because I really didn't believe I did. And so she did her deal. And then the last thing she says to me is she says, I have a message for you. And I'm like, well, lay it on me. You know, what is this? And she says, God wants me to tell you that he really loves you. He has great plans for you and Colin, and he really loves you. And, you know, that's a miracle. That's just a pure miracle. And all I had to do was be willing to say, yes, I'm going to go do that. Not because I believed in it, because I thought that kind of stuff was pretty off the wall and whacked out. You know, nowadays you wouldn't hear me talk like that. But back then, I was very in my head and not in my heart. So that's how I got through step 3. And I believe anything you pray for or ask for God, just be willing to be humble and be willing to be willing, and God will put it all in place for you. Or our higher powers. If I'm using God and it's offending people, you know, sorry, that's what I call my higher power. So it says in the 12 and 12, we need to keep moving forward in recovery, keep developing our spiritual consciousness if we are to remain spiritually awake and fully alive. And I kind of think about this as in, when I heard the word spiritual fitness, the first word went fitness, pump weights. Okay, I get that. And I thought, yeah, when I worked out, when I started my physical fitness plan in OA, you know, at 280 pounds, I didn't do the same amount of fitness things I did at 170. So where did I start? Well, I started with aqua jog, you know, running in the pool. That's all I could do with my legs. And slowly I got stronger, and slowly I added more fitness. And slowly I could feel my body changing, you know, in the fitness level. It's the same as spiritual fitness. I think that you got to come up with a plan, at least in my mind. I had to come up with, what's a plan? You know, what am I going to do this spiritual stuff? So you get spiritual reflections from working the steps. Obviously, if you're eating or you're in any addiction, your spirit doesn't have the full opportunity to come out. You're pushing it down with something. You're drugging yourself. So your spirit, your true essence, doesn't have as much opportunity. So when you start working your steps and you start cleaning up, I think you get more opportunity to get in touch with that real self, that inner spirit. And that's what I needed to do. That's my story. I needed to make some choices in step one and two and three and start cleaning up my food and start coming up with a plan. And then spiritual fitness, I decided that I would try this meditation business. I had no idea what meditation was. I had a dialogue that had about seven people, voices in my head constantly. If I saw something, I would be, let's analyze that at least seven times or eight times. And, you know, if someone asked me to make a decision, well, my God, we'd have to do the full debate at least a day or two. And so I'm glad when I started to meditate, because I had to learn to quiet the dialogue all the time. At least, and when I started, I just bought some CD or tape back then, actually. I plumped myself in my bedroom floor. I tried to do the Zen thing. It didn't quite work. But I tried. And just, you know, at first, I would make it maybe a minute, literally. But I just kept doing, because I think the only way to get results with anything, whether it be physical fitness or spiritual fitness, is consistency. Consistent willingness to keep trying. Explore, you know. Page 103 in our 12 and 12 says, God finds many ways to help people through us as long as we are willing to do what we can, when we can, and keep ourselves on the path of spiritual progress. That's really, you know, just keep moving forward. I mean, I kept trying with meditation. It took about 6 to 7 months before I realized one day I'd made it 15 minutes on the meditation CD or tape. I keep saying CD, but it tape. And it was like, wow, you know, it wasn't an overnight success. I didn't become a meditator, and it took consistency. Every morning I got up, I had little routines I did, which I called my meditations. I would read On Awakening out of the big book. I would read the part on acceptance out of the big book. And I would say a little prayer. Do I do the same thing today? No. I've progressed to another place. I do other things. And I can't say I set out to do that knowing in my head what I would do. I just trusted that if I kept moving forward, kept a willingness to learn, and kept an open mind, God would work through me through the people in the program. And it worked. It really did. What else can I say about that? There's some principles, spiritual principles that are in our steps. When you do step one, you get honesty. When you do step two, there's hope. Step three is faith. Step four and five is courage and integrity. Then there's a willingness and humility in step six and seven. And step eight and nine, it's self-discipline and love. And step 10 is perseverance. 11, spiritual awareness. And 12 is service. So, I mean, those are the spiritual principles, and they're embodied in the steps. So as long as you're doing your steps, you're spiritually progressing. If you want to add a little, you know, extras, and you want to connect with that inner spirit or hear the inner voice, you can do things like it says in step 11 and pray. You can turn your life over to God, and, you know, you can do some meditation. And there's lots of ideas in our 12 and 12, and there's lots of ideas in the big book about how to do that. And so, what else can I say? I think for myself, what I've learned about spiritual consciousness is getting conscious with myself and being okay to be me. I spent a long time not being me. I was everything. I was like a chameleon. Lying was my best second nature. You know, I could be anything you wanted in any moment. And I prided myself on this. I thought, wow, I'm good. But you see, I never really knew me. And so what the program taught me was just be me and just be okay with being me. And whenever I run into difficulties and I'm really unsure and I get all stressed out and nervous, like before assembly, I have to remember, hey, I just got to be me. And the second piece of information I got once in one of my meditations, see, service really brings you to the learning about some of these places. When you start putting yourself in relationships with other people and doing service, you know, it pushes me. At least that's been my experience. And I was running to be vice chair on our Region 1 board, and I sat down and I did a meditation that morning before the elections. And here comes this little piece of advice trickling the way it trickles for me. And it says, be prepared to be humiliated in every moment of every day. Pretty good advice. I mean, if you wake up and you're that humbled in life, just to do whatever, you can be yourself. Because who cares? If you get humiliated, you serve God's, at least, you know, I had served the message I received that morning. I've had a friend of mine give me a little card last year after assembly, and it's on humility. Humility to me is how I stay conscious with God. The willingness to put myself in the hands of my higher power. So it says, humility, in perpetual quietness of heart, it is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me, and when I am blamed or despised, it is to have a blessed home in myself, and kneel to my Father in secret and be in peace, as in a deep sea of calmness when all around me seems to be in trouble. And this is a prayer Dr. Bob had on his desk. And so it was given to me. It really reminded me of, that's really what it's, for me, it's about. You know, I can think of an outside speaker that in program, and he always says, go to Tahiti. Go to that inner place inside of you. That's your space, right? And anyhow, and so when I do anything in life, when I'm confused or I'm kind of trying to figure something out, I go to my inner quietness inside. And I don't know, that looks different for each of us. And how you find it, I can't tell you. It's a different journey for each of us. There's no set instructions here. But if you just become willing to go, you know, there's a good point, yeah. If you become willing to listen. You know, I remember going before a meeting in my first beginning days, and I went for coffee with some people from the meeting because the lady didn't show up with the church key. So we all went to this thing, and there was just her and me. And I said to her, how do you hear all these messages that you get? Like, where do these come from? Like, I get messages, but I don't feel this is like from any higher power. They're just all the time. And she says, well, do you ever stop and listen, or are you always talking? Well, those who know me know I love to talk. I always figured that was part of my spiritual well-being. So I loved it when I heard those words, because I then started to just take the time to listen. And that made such a difference, just being willing to sit quietly and say, okay, everyone else, just be quiet for a while. I'm going to listen for something. Because I didn't know what I was listening for. You know, and then I learned, you know, and then I think the other part of that is as you get clean from the food and as you recover, you start to feel your body. Your body then becomes part of who you are, and you can take that in for spiritual wellness as well. And, you know, you start to hear the mind becomes empty, and then you get more consciousness. Okay. Consciousness. Let's talk about that. I think a lot of people, for myself, one of the things I did for a little while was I became so into meditation that I was seeking spiritual consciousness through unconsciousness, if that makes any sense. I was constantly going into a place of peace, but not really in this reality of living. And so part of my growth has been learning how to be conscious in these environments, like right now, you know, I'm under a little bit of stress with all everyone looking here, and but I can stay conscious enough in myself and be present right here. And so that's part of putting down the food and doing the steps and following your heart. And that's it. Thank you.
Now we have open sharing, and it's for 2 minutes. So 3 minutes. Okay, so it's 3 minutes sharing. So if you could, so there's no spaces on the tape. If you could just kind of make a line if you'd like to share, and then just come up, and the timer will let you know when it's time to quit.
Hi, everyone. My name is Pam, compulsive eater, recovering compulsive eater. Very grateful for that. Wow, a lot of us wanted to know about spirituality today, and thank you so much for your shares. Wow. I feel like I was in program for quite a while before I could hear messages from my higher power, because I didn't have a higher power that I trusted very much for a long time. For several years. And at one point, I had a burning bush experience. I was listening to Joe and Charlie tapes in my kitchen, binging. Mm-hmm. You know, all my you know, slip questions, anything like that, all start with, I was in my kitchen by myself late at night. And what was I doing there? Maybe I needed to be somewhere else to hear God's message. So, yeah, and I was listening to the part in the tapes about how alcohol triggers that physical response of craving. And I thought, sugar's my alcohol. Had I heard this for 4.5 previous years? Well, maybe I had, maybe I hadn't. But boy, I heard it that night. And I was willing to do what I needed to do for the first time. And that's when abstinence came to me, and it couldn't get through before. And that whole idea of consciousness, being conscious, I was so afraid of that. I didn't want to be with myself. I didn't like myself very much, and I didn't think it was a very safe place to be, because of all the yama yama yama. Yeah, this was not higher power's messages. This was just my, you know, squirrel in the cage. And the ability to stay with myself and with my higher power has increased over time. I've been in food recovery for 15.5 years. And it's been a slow process, but it happens, and it does evolve. That's the thing, you know. Thank you. What I started doing for my spirituality, my spiritual practices, is different than what I do today. And what I do today is different than what I will do tomorrow. Not because today isn't working, but because I'm just led. I am led by higher powers' invitations. And that's how I see them today, as invitations. And I can say no. I'll get the invitation again, maybe in another way, but I'll get it again. Until I say yes. And I'm finding that to be kind of a really cool track to be on. So that's it for me. Thank you.
My name's Margie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm really glad to be here today and to be willing to share. Sometimes recently I've come to these things and I just sit and don't share, and that's kind of strange. I don't know. Sometimes it feels strange. Sometimes it feels good. I wanted to talk a little bit about when I really surrendered and really made a decision to be more spiritual. And I was living in Portland at the time, and I'd been in Overeaters Anonymous for about 8 years, and when this event happened, but about a year before that, I had moved up to Mount Hood to a little town called Welch's, and it was about 50 miles out of Portland, and I worked in Portland, so I was driving back and forth, and it sort of made sense at the time because I'd been doing summers up there as a at a camp for handicapped kids, and I knew some of the AA people up there, and it was just cool. And it was a terrible year. I mean, it was a good idea, but but it was a terrible year. And I was either running to Portland to go to meetings, or I was hiding and eating in my house. And it took a bit to do that because it was a 20-minute drive to the grocery store that stayed open after 8 o'clock at night. And I would always sort of wait until later to binge. And so I had to drive into, you know, and that, yeah, it was a 40-minute drive, you know. Oh, God. Anyway, I was younger then. I don't stay up quite that late. Okay, is that one more? Oh, dear. Okay, I'll make it quicker. So the following summer when I went to the Manuka retreat, someone said the apartment in my house, in the house that I live in, is available. And it was one of those God things because it had been a bad winter, but it was being a wonderful summer. And I was just, you know, now I was at camp and it was just real close to home and da-da-da-da. And I was real abstinent and it was just wonderful. And I got to thinking about how bad the winter had been. And I realized that I needed to be in Portland where there were more meetings and more people because I needed to have people close and to have access to meetings. And I could not be tough and independent and on the mountain and da-da-da-da. I couldn't survive. And it was such a decision to recover and to put my life and my whole recovery in God's hands. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Elaine. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I just wanted to thank the leaders for their share. It was very inspirational, and I was trying to think, boy, gee, burning bush experiences. You know, I was like, Anyway, I was like, I feel the least qualified to talk about my spiritual life. But I've been in the program since 1986, and my top weight before in my life was 220. I weigh about 55 pounds less than that now. And when I came into the program, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 pounds more than now. So that was a while back. So I've maintained a weight loss for a long time with my higher power. But I came into OA because I wanted to lose weight because I wanted to get married. So, and I remember saying prayers to God, and I was very angry with God that God had not brought me a husband. So, but I did receive this little voice that said, well, do you think I would leave you out of that? And I always thought, I wonder if that's a message from God. I don't know. But it was the only message I had. So I, you know, every time I got angry with God, I was like, and then I would remember that little through my mind. I think, well, maybe it was a message from God. I don't know. But, you know, I just got married in 2008, finally. So, and finally, God answered my prayer. What did you take so long for? But anyway, God brought me a really wonderful spiritual husband. He's not a religious guy, but he's very spiritual. And I'm thinking, I didn't, you know, because when I first met him, I thought, well, he's not a religious guy. That's not what I wanted. But anyway, God brought me a very spiritual person, and I'm really, I love my husband and everything. So, ultimately, what helped me bring my husband to me was I had decided, well, okay, I guess I'm never going to get married. And I'm not happy with myself. I had like years of, real white knuckle abstinence. I was like, where's this happiness from? Where's this happiness that people talk about? I didn't have it. So even though I'd lost weight anyway. So I did go to it's not a program person, but it was sort of a spiritual experience where she asked me to look at my own heart. And that still brings sort of tears to my eyes when I think about how my heart felt, and I got in touch with a lot of my feelings. And that was really the experience I had of getting in touch with my feelings that helped me bring my husband. So I'm the living proof that keep coming back.
I'm Jim. I'm an overeater. And a lot of things have happened recently, but one of the things I did is I read a book that just changed my life about staying in the moment. And it was such a huge thing. I went out and bought 10 of them, and I gave some to some friends, some to people I kind of knew, and some to some complete strangers. I went down to Capitol Lake, and I remember I walked up to a lady, and I said, here, I'd like to give you this. And she said, uh-uh. And I said, well, this is, and I, whatever. And she said, no. And I said, well, do you watch Oprah? I was thinking of anything. And I said, well, Oprah really likes this book. It's one of her favorites. And, I'm trying to think of anything. And she said, oh, okay, well, that's great. And I said, will you take the book? And she said, no. And I said, well, I came up with every reason I could. And she wouldn't take the book. I literally turned around, and two ladies were walking by. And I said, would you like this book? And one of them had already snagged it out of my hand. And the other one said, free. And I said, yeah. And they were fighting over it on the way as they walked away. And, what happened recently, that was a long time ago. I was talking to my neighbor, and I mentioned this book. And she said, really? She said, I met a lady the other day that some guy kept trying to give her this book. And she immediately went out and bought the book. She wouldn't take it from me, but she immediately went out and bought the book. And she said it changed her life. And it goes to show, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I think about karma, and that's something I think about all the time. And one thing that's helping my program is the friends that I have and that talk to me. And I say I had a bad year last year, but really everything that was bad happened when I got abstinence, because that's when I started feeling it. So that person has really helped me a lot through those things. But the karma is, you reap what you sow, you plant the seeds. I can plant seeds, which, some appear or sprout right away, and some it might be 10, 20 years down the road. But, those seeds are just going to meetings, being of service, all those things. But I think the biggest thing that's helped me with spirituality is, I can polish an apple and I can put it in a basket. I can polish an apple and put it in a, whatever. And I can polish all these apples. But if I choose to just use my will on one thing and just throw that rotten apple into that bushel, it's like the whole thing goes. And, so I need to remember I have to follow the spiritual program and everything, even when I don't want to, even when I want to, when I'm just resentment and everything. And so I just have to remember I have to follow it in everything, not just where I choose.
Time for us to quit, but let's, if we could all join in a huge circle and close with, I put my hand in yours.